Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Getting Down and Wordy podcast ad.
What do we do on this podcast?
Well, it's the first Edamusical podcast.
Can you try that again in real words so that people can understand?
Fine. We talk about the intersection of popular music and language.
Oh, can we also talk about Eurovision?
Okay.
Find us on Apple and Spotify.
We are a Podmoth Network podcast.
This is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system.
Curfew is in full effect. Everyone lock your doors and don't answer after midnight. Early on Wednesday episodes are about to be released.
Tell us about your encounters with Early on Wednesday.
Ladies, this is Natasha with Cryptids, Creeps, and Conspiracy. You guys are great. I mean, you're funny. You're very interactive with people, both on the pod and through social media. And your guys' detail in your episodes is great.
I think it's pretty awesome.
Stacey and Lavender keep you very engaged in the topic.
And you guys make me laugh throughout my day when I'm having a crappy day.
You heard it here first. Stay safe out there, ghouls.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Thanks for joining us once again, everybody. Good to see you, Mom.
Nice to see you, Declan. Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, go ahead and give us a follow, give us a rate, give us a like, give us all that fun stuff. If you like this episode, just skip right past my story. Go to Mom's story.
Yeah, I mean, my story's got some gruesomeness to it, but no children. So there's at least that.
Well, what story do you have for us, Mom?
I am going to be telling you about Melanie and William McGuire, or Bill McGuire, and the cases often referred to as the suitcase killer case.
Oh, no, that doesn't sound good.
It's not. It's not. But it's not going to be any children involved in that. So,
yeah.
Let's get into yours and your depravity of your gross people, since this is a part two of last week.
Yes, today I'm going to be talking about the story of Anike Lewis. Or Lucas, sorry, not Lewis. Anike Lucas. She's got a very harrowing survival story. But to go with this story, I feel bad just even like doing this, but here's a drink that goes with the story. I mean, it's called Castle to Castle. To make this, you need 1.5 ounce of Irish whiskey, 1.5 ounce of apple juice. This says Fuji apple juice, but I just used regular apple juice.
So did I.
3/4 ounce lemon and 1/2 ounce of syrup. It says acacia honey syrup, but I just used honey.
Simple. I used honey syrup, but I don't think it's acacia honey. I've never seen a drink that was so oddly specific in the ingredients before.
Yeah. I just use whiskey, apple juice, lemon, and honey. So
yeah.
Let's give it a try.
Okay.
I think it needs more lemon.
Right. I agree. And I think that simple syrup would be better than honey. I like honey, but I don't like honey in my cocktails. I don't think I've had a good cocktail with honey.
Really?
And I had one a couple weeks ago that had honey syrup, and I was like, what's wrong with this? And I'm pretty sure it's the honey syrup.
Tennessee honey is delicious, though.
Yeah, but it doesn't have, I don't know. Honey has a very distinct flavor. Again, I like honey. I like to eat honey. I like peanut butter and honey sandwiches. I think they're fantastic. I like honey in my hot tea, but I do not like honey in my cocktails.
Okay, I'll give you that. I mean, it does have a very distinct taste. It's like a
dark,
like a malty almost.
Yeah. You know what it reminds me of? Tequila.
Maybe that's why I like it.
This drink reminds me of tequila. Gina, you might like it.
What kind of whiskey did you use?
So, you know, Gina likes Irish whiskey, but.
What kind of whiskey did he use? Because I just used Jim.
I don't remember the brand. It wasn't an Irish whiskey because I was too lazy to go to the store and buy an entire bottle of Irish whiskey.
I don't drink Irish whiskey anyway, so.
No.
Okay,
neither.
Let's get to this awful
story. For anyone who is not wanting to listen to child trafficking, you can fast forward a while to my episode, my story.
Just wait till you hear her voice. I mean, yeah. I would just, anyone listen, just skip ahead. Gina, you're definitely not going to like this story. Just skip right on ahead.
Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, sorry in advance, but let's get into this.
Okay. Because
I think it's important that people know that this type of thing happens.
Agreed. We can't ignore it.
It's not fun to talk about, but it happens literally everywhere. So I just think it's kind of important that people are aware of it.
For sure.
So this week I will be talking about Aneke Lucas, who was a victim of child abuse ring orchestrated by Michelle Nihul, who we talked about last week in the Dutro case.
Yes.
He was one of the people implicated in the ring, or in the Dutro case, but also in this ring. Aneke was born in April 12, 1963, to a seemingly regular family. However, what happened behind closed doors was anything but that. Her mother, Sabine, was reportedly abused as a child by her grandmother and possibly others. She allowed this cycle of abuse to continue on to her daughter, Aneke. When Aneke was 5 years old, her mother would allow her to be groomed by her house cleaner for money. The cleaner would take Aneke to her house for the weekend, where she and her husband would groom Aneke and other children, including taking the children to an orgy where they were abused. When Aneke turned 6, she did something that would make her mother angry. 6 years old.
6? So this is before she was 6? Okay.
Yeah, well,
I'm gonna try to not interrupt so we can get through it faster.
If you want to take your headphones out, it might be
the best. No, I'm going to listen because you're right. It's important that we know this shit.
So when she was 6, she did something to make her mother angry. And she dragged her by her hair and threw Aneke into the car and drove her to the Dioriac Manor, which was owned by the Dioriac family in France. Aneke's mother was friends with the family and knew about the things that would happen inside the mansion. Which, I looked it up, I'm pretty sure it's a hotel now and you can go rent a room there. I don't know if it's the exact same house, but in France there's a place called Chateau de Dioriac and you can rent a room there. I just think that's weird, but
not
I hope it's a different place. I hope it's a different place.
I hope so.
So she was dropped off by her mother and was greeted by Florence D'Oriac, who brought her inside. She stripped Aneke and sent her into the orgy where she was abused. This would be a common thing in Aneke's story. Aneke's mother brought her to another mansion later. She begged her mother to take her home, but her mother just smiled at her and drove away. She was sent into a small room with only a dirty mattress in the corner. The ring would send in one man at a time to abuse her. Her mother came back to pick her up after a week of starvation, abuse, and attacks that only took place in this dingy room inside the mansion. When she tried to tell her mother what happened, her mother told her that she was doing this to make sure Aneke would get a good husband. That's what the mom thought was going to happen from sending her child to this fucking abuse ring.
Oh, God, this bitch.
Yeah.
I hate her.
Fucking awful.
Worst awful. Mom ever.
Awful hater. Human being.
I hope something bad happens to her. One of the ringleaders
was Paul Vanden Boynitz. What's that?
I said, I hope something bad happens to her in your story.
You'll see.
No, you're shaking your head.
I don't want to spoil it, but
okay. No,
nothing bad happens to her. Sadly. But one of the ringleaders was Paul Vanden Boynitz, who served as the Prime Minister of Belgium and the Minister of Defense. This was a very high-ranking person. The top of the... I don't know European politics, but I think Prime Minister is like their president.
Like pretty high up there, I believe, yeah.
Pretty much. Like, this guy was the ringleader. He was the leader of the ring, along with Michel Nahul.
Ugh.
Yeah. So this guy, Paul, once asked Aneke to choose between her life and the life of a rabbit. Aneke chose herself, so Paul forced her to kill the rabbit with a knife. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the type of things that they were doing to her.
I hate this guy, too.
Paul was in charge. He was in charge of directing the purchase and sale of children to other countries around the world due to his political power, as well as setting up and planning special parties where aristocrats and politicians from around the world would come. At these parties, new children were sent to mingle with the aristocrats and would do whatever the powerful people wanted, such as getting beaten, assaulted, and even murdering these children.
No! I hate it.
From ages 6 to 9 years old, Aneke was used in these parties as an object by the aristocrats.
Monsters.
Paul tried trading Aneke to an international trafficking ring, but they decided she was too special for that because her father was connected to royal blood in France, which was determined by the ring to make her special. She didn't really know her father growing up. Her father left when she was like 2 or 3, I think. Before she was 4, I believe. But she didn't really know her father. And I guess they're connected to some weird Protestant French thing it didn't really make sense to me. But they determined she was special because of who her father was.
Okay.
During this time, she would be forced into mind control training by the ring to try and initiate her. This included her being naked and videotaped while doing her favorite activities such as singing, dancing, getting a massage, and things like that. This mind control lasted for about a week or two, and during this time, she was not assaulted by anyone in the ring. Because they were trying
that's
to
nice.
Make it seem like, oh... Do all your favorite things while you're naked and being videotaped so it seems normal to you now. Like that they were...
Oh my God. These...
Yeah, they were doing some fucking horrible things.
Fuckers.
She was fairly good at singing, so the ring would use that to their benefit. They would make Aneke entertain powerful people at these parties with the hopes that they would fall in love with her, which the ring could use as political blackmail.
Of course.
In 1973, Aneke met 21-year-old Patrick Hamers, who was a suspected perpetrator of several murders and mass shootings. So there was this gang in Belgium that would go around just like killing random people, and no one was ever caught for it, but he was suspected to be one of the people involved with the gang.
Okay.
So, yeah. Patrick took a liking to 11-year-old Aneke and convinced her handler, Paul, to let him have some alone time with Aneke in his room at the mansion. When they got to the room, Patrick told her that he wasn't going to assault her and he would actually protect her from the other aristocrats that wanted to. So, for a while, he actually was kind of, I don't want to say good, but better than the other people involved. Kept her safe. Like, he didn't touch him himself, but wouldn't let anyone else touch her. So he was okay. I'm not going to say
less
good.
Of a dirtbag than the rest of the dirtbags.
I don't know if dirtbag's the right word. That's not hard enough. It's just
true.
Scum.
Yeah. I don't know that there's words harsh enough for these monsters.
Yeah. The following day, when Aneke's mother dropped her off at the mansion, she was brought down to the basement where Paul and Michelle Nuhul, not Michelle from the other story. Their names are very similar, but they were abusing Aneke's friend. The two men killed Aneke's friend and left the room. When they left, they released biting beetles into the room with Aneke and her friend's body.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
She said in an interview she was able to like dissociate and didn't feel it at all. But like, 11 years old, and you have to see that and be.
Okay.
At another party, Michelle was speaking with Florence D'Oriac about Aneke and told Florence that they couldn't do anything with her because Patrick had claimed her. This upset Florence because Florence wanted Patrick, so Florence forced Aneke to watch her have sex with a line of men, including her own father.
Wait.
Yeah.
Not Aneke's father, but Florence's father.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Florence was like 20-ish years old, like mid-20s, I believe, when this happened.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the type of weird shit that's happening.
And
in spring of 1974, Aneke was brought to a castle where a party was taking place. There were more children than adults at these parties, and Patrick as well as Michelle was there. Michelle asked Patrick when he would start sharing her with the group, and Patrick very loudly and aggressively threatened to kill Michelle.
Good.
After he threatened to kill him, he took Aneke up to his room that they were sharing together because he claimed her. And they talked for a little bit and went to bed.
Right.
Later that night, Aneke woke to the sounds of gunshots. She looked out the window of the room that she and Patrick had been sleeping in and saw one of the boys she met at the party. Several men were hunting him and shot him dead.
Later that year,
Patrick decided he was tired of waiting and decided to have sex with Aneke. Assault. She was 11 years old. You can't have sex with an 11-year-old.
That's not consensual. She's a child. How old is this scumbag?
21.
Fucking hell.
Jesus. Yeah.
Okay.
Paula asked Aneke to stab him with a knife, and she got flashbacks to when she had to kill the rabbit that Paul made her kill.
Did she kill him?
No, she freaked out and just stabbed him with the knife in the hand, like he wanted her to.
And then she cut
her own hand, making a blood pack. That's why he wanted to do a blood pack with her.
Okay.
Aneke asked Patrick why he enjoyed killing people, and his response was basically, "I like feeling a person's true self when the gun is pressed against their head." Yeah, he was responsible. Like, he would go in, the gang that he was involved with would go in and just kill everyone inside of a supermarket. They wouldn't, and like, rob it, but they'd kill everyone they saw. And they did that a couple times in Belgium, so.
I don't need to go to Belgium now. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm good. There's a gnarly statistic about the abuse in Belgium, and it's not good.
I don't want to know.
You don't. I don't want to say it.
Okay.
So this question angered Patrick, and he drove her to her mother's house. There, her mother drugged her with sleeping pills as a punishment. When the pills wore off, Aneke found Patrick and her mother having sex. Yeah.
Not, of course. Oh, okay.
This upset her, and she tried to commit suicide by taking the rest of the sleeping pills, but this was unsuccessful. Several days after this, her mother brought her back to the ring. When she saw Patrick again for the first time after he had slept with her mother, she slapped him, and in retaliation, he assaulted her and beat her. Several weeks later, Aneke met up with Florence and three other young men. The men assaulted Aneke in a barn, and all of them left her except for one boy, 14-year-old Peter. Peter explained that this was his initiation into the ring and explained that he was sorry. Yeah. The two met up again several days later, and she confessed to Peter about what she does in the ring, kind of told him everything that was happening. The two connected emotionally and talked for hours before he assaulted her again. Which is just...
No.
The fact that they're not even being forced to, they're alone right now, and they've both been just trained to...
No.
When she returned home the next day, she was greeted by Patrick speaking to her mother. He took her upstairs and tried to assault her, but this time she fought back. Patrick put his gun to her head until she gave in. Several weeks later, Patrick and Aneke were at the mansion again when he discovered from Florence that Aneke and Peter were now together. Because Florence set this whole thing up. Like, she trying to...
Oh.
It's like some stupid soap opera setup. Like, ugh.
I hate all of these people.
Yeah, it's fucking horrible. Patrick became irate with this information and chased Aneke with a knife. When he caught up to her, he cut up the backs of her legs severely. In September, Aneke and Patrick got into an argument, which he began hitting her as hard as he could until she confessed her love for Peter. Patrick locked her in the room and told her he was going to go kill Peter.
Oh.
Later that night, Peter's father discovered his son's lifeless body in their home.
My God.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be a bizarre story. I have not... It's all brutal.
I know, it's both. It's really both.
Okay.
So sometimes later, Patrick and Aneke got into another argument after he assaulted her. He made her leave his room, and this is when she ran into Florence. Florence asked her if he was having sex with her, and Patrick proceeded to assault her, saying that there's no semen in here, so you must be lying. Yeah.
Okay.
Florence told Aneke that she was lucky she hadn't gotten her period yet. She confessed to Aneke that she had already had an abortion. She brought Aneke to Michelle, which Michelle brought Aneke into a separate room with other children in it and a butcher's block that was black with the blood from other children.
No.
Yeah. Michelle and the other children strapped Aneke to the butcher's block, and various tools such as knives, scalpels, nails, and fish hooks were used to torture her. Michelle forced the other children to start cutting and burning her body to cause as much pain as possible. As Michelle was about to cut off her foot with a cleaver, a man came in and ordered him to stop. After leaving the room she was tortured in, she saw Patrick assaulting an 8-year-old girl in the hallway in front of everyone. Patrick then brought Aneke to Paul, who had another little girl in the room with them. Paul ordered an ultimatum and made Aneke choose between herself or the other girl. Aneke chose the other girl. Patrick took Aneke to his room and cleaned her bloodied body, while Paul and several other ring members took the other girl to a house nearby. Patrick disclosed to her that he made a deal with Paul to free Aneke from the ring in exchange for Patrick being his personal henchman. So, this is the best person in the ring, it sounds like. He's basically offering his life up for hers.
Wow.
Patrick and Aneke went to the house that Paul had gone to with the other girl, and Aneke saw the girl strapped into a dentist chair. She was forced to watch as they tortured the girl by burning her and cutting her abdomen open. They handed the knife to Aneke and ordered her to kill the girl. She stabbed the girl as hard as possible in the stomach and immediately blacked out. When she blacked out, she had a near-death experience. Check out episode 77 if you'd like to hear more about those.
Yeah.
Aneke says she was greeted by her teacher. That's what she called the being she encountered in her near-death experience.
Okay.
And explained everything that has happened and will happen to her, like helping her understand everything.
Oh, okay.
When she awakes, she is still lying in front of the girl that is now dead. After this whole ordeal, Patrick kept up his side of the bargain and drove Aneke home. Aneke survived in this child exploitation ring for 5.5 years.
Wow.
She estimated she was assaulted 6 hours a week, totaling 1,716 hours of assault. Her mother was upset that Aneke had been taken out of the network because they were paying her regularly for Aneke. So her mother was profiting off of this whole thing. She tried to bring her back one last time, and she was stripped and led into a room with 5 men, one of which she recognized as the man who had hunted the boy at the party she saw. The men knew that Aneke was no longer in the group, but proceeded to assault her anyways. The man aimed the rifle at her head and missed by inches. This caused an argument between the other men, and they just decided to let her go.
Oh, Jesus.
She got dressed and was going to leave the mansion when she grabbed one of the rifles off of that were like hanging up on the wall. And she aimed it at her mother, who was just staring blankly in the car. Aimed it right at her head and pulled the trigger. The gun was empty.
Fuck! Damn it!
Yeah.
I was holding out hope, Declan!
I know. She eventually got into the car, and her mother drove her home. And she ran away from home at 15. In February of 1982, Aneke met her biological father. However, this wasn't a happy story because he actually assaulted her.
Oh my!
Shortly after this, she left Belgium and moved around Europe until she settled in New York and became an author telling about her story.
Wow.
And side note, so Paul, the ringleader, prime minister dude, he was actually kidnapped by Patrick in 1989. And was held for about a month and returned for a ransom of 63 million francs, or about $3 million today.
Wow.
Paul and Michelle got off scot-free. However, both served some time in prison for unrelated fraud charges. and Patrick committed suicide inside of his jail, and no autopsy was performed.
I hate it.
Epstein of Belgium, the guy committed suicide. He hung himself in his jail cell and no autopsy. The one who had all the information.
All of those people are monsters.
Sorry for telling that story, everybody, but I feel like it needs to be known because of how disgusting it is. But
yeah. Yuck.
Gross.
Well, can I tell you my brutal story
now? Let's hear your story. Yeah.
Okay.
It'll probably cheer us up compared to mine.
No children were harmed in the making of this story. William McGuire, who went by Bill, was born September 21st, 1964 in New York. After graduating high school, Bill joined the Navy, where he worked as an electronics technician. He married Marcy Polk in 1986. It was a rough marriage with allegations of physical and emotional abuse from Bill towards Marcy. Marcy reported that Bill began drinking and gambling heavily. This likely contributed to their problems and subsequent divorce, with the marriage ending in 1994. Marcy was granted a restraining order against Bill the following year after he threw a rock through her window. So they're divorced and he's still throwing rocks at her window. Yeah. Single again, Bill met his second wife, Melanie. Melanie Slate was born October 8, 1972 in Ridgewood, New Jersey. She grew up in New Jersey and graduated high school there. She went to Rutgers University and graduated in 1994, then went to nursing school. She graduated nursing school in 1997. Bill and Melanie were married in 1999, and the couple started having children fairly quickly. They ended up having two sons. This marriage reportedly also had some difficulties, similar to what was reported in Bill's first marriage with drinking and gambling. However, the couple stayed together, living in an apartment with their two young sons. In 2004, they started the process of buying a home together in a nearby town. At this time, Melanie was working as a nurse for a large fertility clinic, and Bill was working as an instructor at a local college, teaching computer programming. Bill was well respected by his colleagues and was described as a model employee. Melanie was apparently liked by her coworkers as well, especially the one she was having an affair with. You know, sleeping around at work, I guess they like you. Then at the end of April 2004, Bill went missing, although Melanie didn't report Bill missing. She said Bill assaulted her and mocked her for crying when and then he left the house, and that was the last time she saw him. So they got in an argument. She was crying. He made fun of her for it and then left, said, "I'm leaving." That's her story. The fight was the reason she did not report him missing. She was, okay, he's gone, we're done, whatever. A month later or so, she filed for divorce. 3 days after that, she was informed that Bill was dead. Here's how the police discovered that Bill had died. In the beginning of May, and over the period of almost 2 weeks, three suitcases were discovered in and around the Chesapeake Bay with grisly contents, to say the least.
Oh, no.
Three separate suitcases. They all appeared to be from a matching set.
Were they like carry-on size?
Well, they were all different sizes. They were a matching set. Okay. And matching set, there's usually a big one, and a middle one, and then a carry-on one.
Yeah. Okay.
They each contained dismembered body parts of a man wrapped in garbage bags. The head and torso were found with bullet wounds in one of the suitcases. A sketch was made of the face for identification purposes, which was circulated to the press. An anonymous female caller contacted the police, identifying the person as possibly being Bill McGuire. Through fingerprint tests, it confirmed that, yes, in fact, it was Bill. And that is when the police were finally able to put a name to the victim. However, there has been some concern over who the anonymous tipster was, because some of the people that had looked at the picture were like, that is not a recognizable picture. Remember, by the time it had been found, it'd been like a couple of weeks. Decomposition, swelling, gross stuff. It had been in the water. So a lot of people that saw it were like, there's no way to tell that that was Bill. So some people thought it was kind of weird that it was an anonymous tip. Like, you call in and go, hey, I think I know who that body floating in the bay was, but I'm not going to tell you who I am. So, of course,
that seems very suspicious.
I'm sure thinking it was Melanie. Police investigated the case with all thoughts leaning back to the estranged wife, Melanie. No shock there. Through the investigation, it was discovered that before Bill went missing, Melanie purchased a handgun and bullets in Pennsylvania. Different state. They were living in New Jersey. Same type of gun and bullets were used in the murder, but Melanie explained that she only purchased the gun at Bill's insistence that they would need protection in their new house, because they bought a new house and he, according to her, said, oh, we're going to need a gun in our new house. Why he didn't think they needed a gun in their apartment, I don't know, but this was her explanation as to why she bought a gun. Yeah. Police had also learned that Bill's car had been towed from a motel on May 8th. When they looked into the parking situation that resulted in the car being towed, they discovered video footage of the vehicle being left in the parking space on April 30th, the day Melanie claimed that Bill left the house for good. The quality of the video was too poor to identify the person, but Melanie claimed that she had moved the car to the location as a prank against her husband. So I guess they get in a fight.
Don't call him in missing, and then he's in a fight, and he decided to prank him by moving his car. Okay,
right,
sure.
After they got in a fight, and he supposedly left the house, and she never, I don't know what this chick is thinking. Melanie also admitted that a couple weeks, she also admitted that they had owned a set of suitcases similar to what Bill's body had been found in. Forensics were able to match trash bags from the couple's home to the ones that contained the body parts. So this one was kind of like a convoluted thing. Like, after he left her, she packaged up some of his stuff and took it to a friend's house. Like, she was giving away his clothes and things, and she put them in a plastic bag. And then after his body was found in those wrapped in garbage bags, they were able to match. They found out that the friend still had the clothes that she gave them in the bag. And the bag that the donated clothes were in matched the bag that the body parts were found in.
Okay.
That yeah. So apparently tool marks on the manufacturing of plastic of trash bags changes slightly over time, but because on one full roll, it's not going to change a lot. So if you tear off one bag, the manufacturing marks are going to match the bag after it and so forth. So they were able to match the trash bags.
Oh.
So in case people didn't know, you can match trash bags. It was also discovered that someone in the McGuire home had made internet searches about purchasing a gun illegally. what some undetectable poisons were. And then the best one, how to commit murder. I'm sure that Bill did
this. If you have to look that up, you shouldn't do it.
Right. The apartment where Melanie and Bill had lived was searched, but it was several months after the murder. So they basically didn't find anything. Melanie and her children had moved out by then, but there was no evidence of or any DNA. There was nothing found in the apartment, but it had been several months. So they didn't really expect to find much. A blanket was located in one of the suitcases, which was identified as a brand used at the fertility clinic that Melanie worked at. Additionally, green fibers were located in one of the bullets embedded in the body. Not surprisingly, the couple had previously owned a green couch, so investigators believe that a couch cushion had been used as a makeshift silencer when Bill was shot. And remember when I mentioned that Bill's car had been towed because she moved it as a prank?
Yeah.
Police were able to get the vehicle. It was still in the impound lot. Right. And they searched it thoroughly, finding a vial and a syringe of a mysterious liquid in the glove box. It was later identified as chloral hydrate, which is a powerful sedative. The carpet of the driver and passenger side were vacuumed. This was then examined microscopically and found to contain small pieces of skin and flesh, which was described as human sawdust.
That's so gross. That's disgusting.
It's so bad. So, of course, you know, dismembered body, they're like, whoever dismembered him got it on their shoes and tracked it to his car. When she moved the car, that was their evidence that she, yeah. Because they got her saying that she moved the car. So they were like, well, you obviously had the sawdust on your shoes and tracked
it. So gross.
It's so gnarly. It's like the grossest thing ever. Over a year later, Melanie was arrested for Bill's murder. Almost 3 years after Bill's death, the trial began. The prosecution argued that Melanie killed Bill so she could be with her lover. They presented evidence that she had falsely obtained the chloral hydrate by forging the prescription on her boyfriend's prescription pad. He's a doctor at the fertility clinic that she worked at. So she stole one of his prescription pads. You know, this is before electronic prescriptions. They argued that she dismembered his body and disposed of the pieces in their luggage. Melanie maintained her innocence, because of course you would maintain your innocence, throughout the trial and after, claiming that Bill must have been killed related to his gambling debts. The jury wasn't buying her plea of innocence, and she was convicted of murder with a sentence of life in prison. She will be eligible for parole in 2073, when she will be 100 years old.
Yeah, that's funny.
She still claims that she's fully innocent and is hoping that someday her conviction will be overturned. She believes that all the evidence against her is just circumstantial evidence. Some legal experts actually agree with her and are seeking an appeal, stating that there are some unanswered questions to the whole case. But
yeah,
as of right now,
keep pushing, lady.
She is incarcerated for murder, and
she's going to need a lot of shooting stars for that one.
She's going to be there a long time. So, do you have a chaser for us today?
I do, and I can't remember if I did this one already, but the best ever food review show on YouTube. Does it sound familiar at all?
It doesn't sound familiar.
He's like the modern day Anthony Bourdain, but he goes to like crazy places, and like he'll go to China and try like street food and be like,
Does it categorize it by cities?
$20 street food. Here's $100 street food. Like,
I'm going to go to.
He'll show you, like.
This town?
Yeah, he'll go, like, crazy places. He does, like, a. It's very, like, YouTube worthy stuff. Like, he'll try the worst rated foods in every country. Or, like, he went to an African place and ate, like, bat and. Stuff like that, and like, yeah,
okay, I don't need to eat that.
Yeah,
no thanks.
It's pretty interesting though, just to see like what other countries eat regularly,
yeah,
and like other cultures and stuff. Like,
yeah,
I realize I could never be a world traveler, yeah,
no, same,
yeah,
no, I wouldn't do a very good job.
I'm not eating like the what are they called? The weird eggs that start with a B. That's like the live chicken inside of it.
The duck eggs that are like fermented and or something like that. Actual duck in there. Yeah. I can't remember the name either, but I'm not eating that.
Makes my stomach turn just thinking about it.
For real? No, I'm not down with that. Yuck.
What's your chaser, Mom?
My chaser is an Instagram account called Zillow Gone Wild. And
they show
some really cool like mansions. I think Monday is mansion day or something like that. And then they show like a ton of mid-century modern stuff. They have some weird stuff on their houses that you're like, I do not know what happened there, but you get to see cool real estate listings, and some of them are scary and some of them are amazing and make me want millions of dollars so I can buy a mansion somewhere. But
oh yeah, definitely,
it's pretty cool stuff on there. I like it.
I'll have to check that out. That sounds very interesting. I know I love looking at insides of houses and stuff.
Same.
Wow. Thanks for sticking with us through this really rough episode, everybody.
It was
sorry about my story.
Well, I'm sorry that I had to use the phrase tonight. Human sawdust.
Yeah. That's even that phrase alone is better than my story.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's all right. Awful.
Well, love you, Mom.
Love you too, bud.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.